Hi, I'm Frankie. I'm an addict, alcoholic. I am so grateful to be here. One of the linings of this global pandemic is getting to drop into meetings all around the world and getting to see Lila and other friends too. I met Lila, our speaker, right before, well, we were going into the seventh grade, and I felt like I had met a soulmate, just like a soulmate as far as like our level of chaos and our level of insanity and the pace at which we were ready to live life and handle things. And we wreaked havoc, and it was wonderful. And I remember being shocked when she started getting in trouble and going to rehab and going to meetings. And I was like, this can't be right, because you can't be an addict because I'm not an addict and we use the same way. And I was just really convinced that it was impossible because I was an addict. And, you know, and it took me 3 years to get into the rooms. And I absolutely, you know, in that time, we've had so many variations of relationships. We had the using together, and then we had 3 years where she was clean and I was not. And during that time, the people that she was hanging out with, all of these other young people in recovery, were having so much more fun than I was, like, you know, disassembling things in a garage. So I would go and get high and then come and hang out with her and all these people in recovery. And I thought I was a normie, and they called me a normie. And I was clear, though, that they were having the better life than I was having, you know? So 3 years later, when I hit bottom, I called Lila, and like, then we had this relationship where we're in recovery together, you know? And, it's changed and grown so much. And I can't believe that we've known each other, I mean, almost our whole lives at this point. You're an absolute beacon of recovery and hope and change, and yeah, and just creativity. Like, I see through you, Lila, I see like universal creativity. And, it's just such a gift. It's such a gift to watch you in the world and watch you create. And so I'm grateful you're here. I'm grateful you're doing this and sober, and I love you. And everyone, this is Lila.
Hi, I'm Lila, and I'm an addict. And thank you, Frankie, for introducing me. I feel like I don't know if you've ever introduced me before, but that's really, it is great. This is, I used to hate Zoom, and now I just kind of love it because of, you know, it's bringing me closer to my older people. So I'm going to be like kind of predominantly repping NA in this meeting, because that's what I have more experience in. Although now I kind of mix it up. I'm just, you know, I'm just another addict with a story who, you know, I don't speak for NA or AA. I'm just like telling my story. And I kind of like, at this point, I used to think it was really cool getting young, clean, but, and like, it is what it is. But lately I've been having this, like, I don't know if it's because I've gotten more sensitive, in my older age, but like, I just feel a little self-conscious of it, which is, that is what it is. But I feel like, it's not relatable to a lot of people. But it's not really my job to make that call for you guys, 'cause I do think I belong here, even though I've been clean for way longer than I've been using. And so I will start at like what it was like, what happened, what it's like today. And my story, I usually start when I'm a kid, because I knew right away as a kid that something just wasn't quite right with me. And like really early on. And I think I was born just a more sensitive, emotional person. I had a really, and I say that because I had a really, like, it's hard to compare you know what, I've been taught and try and remember to not compare, because that leads to nothing good. Compare and despair, my sponsor always says. But, you know, nothing like really crazy traumatic happened. I had both parents until I was 16. I have a twin sister whom a lot of you know, who is now sober in the rooms and has been for some time, like over a decade now. And but I just knew that there was something not right with me. And I think that's where that's the stem of my addiction. And that's the root of it. And for instance, I just remember feeling like in kindergarten, like the odd man out and the loner, and like all the kids knew each other before, before somehow, you know, like it's everyone's first day of school, like ever. And I felt like they kind of all had this pre-existing relationship and that I was like somehow new on the scene. And that feeling like continued. And I think just being, you know, that sensitive person, like having parents who were doing the best they could, just creating wounds, maybe unintentionally, over the years. Like I see that now, my parents are like pretty fucking good, cool people. I was just, my little kid brain just took what they were giving me. And, I was like really unhappy with that. And I'll probably cry because that's what I do. So I'm getting a hanky. So my parents doing the best they could. When I started to hit, like, and I was the other thing after like a little bit, after a very short while of feeling like I hated school because I didn't belong, I just would rather be at home. I started doing like really rebellious, wild shit, and like not super. Obviously, I was like probably 7 or 8. I would like just leave and do what I wanted, like go off with friends. And like, I just always wanted control. Like from a really, really young age, I was like, I could not wait to be an adult so that I could be in charge of my life and do what I wanted. And I think I had lost respect for my parents, like at a really, really freaking young age. And so that rebellious kind of thing started in me out of like nowhere. And I didn't have any like rebel role models, like leading me astray. Like it was this inner driven, like, fuck you guys kind of anger and sadness. And, so when I hit puberty, it got really a lot worse, and I became, suicidally depressed and conveniently, like found a pack of cigarettes at like 11. Like, I don't think anyone smoked in my house. I found them on the street and I was like, I'm gonna smoke these. And just, I don't know where I got this idea to smoke these cigarettes, but I went to the basement and I like hit one of them and I got a little bit of a head rush and I coughed my lungs out. And I was like, all right, let's keep smoking. Brought him to school, like tried to get other kids. I was in Catholic school at the time, which was only for like 2 years. But I had transitioned there and I was like trying to get these Catholic school girls to smoke cigarettes with me. And so it was just kind of like this burgeoning, like I couldn't stand myself. And was like just curious about all of it and never had any boundaries. Like I just had this immense curiosity. And so the idea when I first started using substances was like, what can I experience and how much more can I experience and how can I get to the point of like obliteration before I actually pass out, you know? So it was like finding that edge of like, you know, how loaded can I get to not feel. And so it was fun. And it was like a revelation when I started, and it was like, oh, I don't have to care, because I realized I cared a lot. I thought a lot, and I wanted an off switch to my brain, and being suicidally depressed. And I'll say this, you know, that was probably like a hormonal thing. And so that's been like a recurring theme, but like, for whatever reason, I felt not okay with Lila, and I overthought about it, and that whole self-obsession, self-obsessed fear is like 100% me. And so because I didn't really, I was like a child, a using child, I just didn't give a shit, and I didn't care about myself. And I didn't care about my parents, and I liked my friends more than my parents, because at least I could be sad and depressed, or like, you know, doing what I wanted to do, which was to get loaded, which was also like, I wasn't that like I was irreverent and like pretty in your face with it. With my parents, like I began getting caught like right away, because I wasn't sneaky enough. And I also wasn't, it was just flagrant. Like I didn't care. And they'd be like, well, you get consequences. And I was like, bring on the consequences, bitches. And I would just leave and be homeless. And I was, I guess, like probably entitled, even though they did the tough love, like they started going to Al-Anon immediately when I began using, and that probably saved my life. So I just had this like huge, I was thinking about sharing all day, and I was just like, I have this huge sensitive ass ego, like where I think I'm super special, and then I walk through and I'm so sensitive walking through life. I'm just like bruised everywhere by like fucking everything. And so using was like freedom. And I didn't have like, I didn't know how to do life. And I had kind of checked out of life before it even really began for me as an adult. So by the time, you know, my using progressed like super, super quickly. Like I never had, people were like, you know, I would hear at meetings, like I have these yets where I told myself I wasn't going to do this drug or that drug. And I was like, I did not have those boundaries at all with myself. I was like, I want to do it all. And, you know, and while I'm at it, like, how can I figure out how to be a drug dealer so that I don't have to, you know, wait for my fucking weekly allowance to go get high? Because I was like, because I wasn't really into thieving at that point. Like that was too, like I had no, you know, I just didn't know how to, I was like this like middle class white kid who like didn't know how to scam or get loaded to the point that I wanted. So, okay, so I got to keep moving because I will get stuck on that. So I started getting in trouble right away, and my parents were like around and intervening like crazy, and I was getting in trouble at school, as you do, until I stopped going to school. And I started getting introduced to meetings. And so I was introduced to meetings like almost immediately after I started using. And I think my first meeting, I was 14 years old. And by that point, like I hadn't even done some of the harder shit that I wound up doing. But within, you know, 3 years, I had done everything I possibly could. But that first meeting, I was just, it was an NA meeting. It was a young people's meeting. And I think the crowd was like more in their early 20s, which I thought, like, I was so naive that I thought everybody over 21 was like a responsible adult, just like my parents, which was not the case. But anyways, they were like these cool younger adults. And I sobbed the whole meeting because I was like, these people get it. And some of the things that I heard at the NA meeting were like, we don't care what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you've done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only in what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. So I was like, fuck yeah, I qualify. And it was a young person's meeting, even though I was probably one of the youngest ones there. And I just was so... I just felt like they got it. Like, there was something else we used to live. We lived to use and used to live. Like, that was... I don't know why I'm getting all choked up, but... I just remember that day so clearly, and I was so broken and felt like, whoa, these people fucking understand. And then I was also like, damn it, man, like, I'm 14, like, I'm not done getting high, motherfuckers. Like, so it was fun until it wasn't fun, and it got not fun very quickly because, you know, as like an unemployed teenager who didn't care about herself, you could imagine the kind of situations I put myself in at that time. And so it got really not fun. And I would start like, oh God, I just like put myself through situations that I would, you know, the next day have horrible shame and guilt. And you think like I get this brief moment of like relief that felt so good being high. And then I have like even worse consequences the next day. And, so it was like that. And I was like, and I knew, I'm like, yeah, I know I'm an addict because I live to use and use to live. Like, that's how I handle life. And, I would like, like, this was my thinking process back then. Like, I would sit and stare out the window when I wasn't high and I would just think about shit. And I'd be like, I just want to be locked up in a facility so that I don't have to deal with shit because I'm not capable. And I just can't do it. And I was also probably like reading some depressing ass literature like Dostoevsky or something too, which didn't help matters. So just like this this sensitive, depressive person that's like, you know, and that with an addictive personality, things progress very quickly. And I wound up going to like several treatment centers, you know, being homeless here and there and thinking that I don't know why I'm like spotlighted here. I just want to be among you. So what happened, that first meeting kind of set the tone where I felt really comfortable in NA. And I think when I was 16, I tried AA and I was like, I have not drank like nearly as much. Like every time I drank, I threw up and I just could not relate to just the one substance. I just knew that I was like everything. And even, you know, I did drink, but like it, like I just always threw up and because I didn't ever feel like controlling my drinking. So, you know, treatments, in and out of treatments, in and out of the rooms, like from a really early age. And I finally, and I never, like, I think I got a sponsor and got up to like step four. She was like, make a list of everyone you know. And I was like, no, like, I don't know. I just wasn't ready to do all of that. And then finally, like back in NA in Northern California, I was like, okay, I'm just going to give this a shot. And if things don't get better in like a year, because I could put together like 30, 60, 90 days, 4 months, and then I would relapse. And I was like, I'll just give myself a year and just see what happens. See if anything gets better. And I half-assed it. Like, I'm telling you guys, and this is the story of like the first 7 years of my recovery was like the lazy man's like really sad. I mean, not to judge, like I stayed clean. So like whatever, apparently that's good enough according to, you know, every clean day is a successful day. It did not feel like that, but So my early recovery was like, what's the like least amount I can do for the most amount of like feeling good? And the magic of recovery to me is that like the little efforts that I put in to it, or like, you know, doing, participating and involving myself, like I've just felt tremendously better. And so thence began my recovery. And I had some like kind of, you know, second, third step experiences in my first treatment center, where like I prayed with no understanding of a higher power, and things changed for me the next day. It was like, I think I was like really resentful towards this girl. And somebody was like, well, why don't you just pray for her? And I was like, no, fuck that. And then I did anyways. And just to see, you know, just to see what would happen. And I wound up waking up the next day feeling differently towards this girl. So that was kind of like a little intro that like that's really struck me. And I was just very impressionable and open-minded. And, you know, like I said, everybody in meetings was smarter than me, you know, like I was very ready to and willing to listen, but I don't think I was really ready to be that vulnerable. And I still have difficulties with that. Like I'm talking about like the crying vulnerable. And, so let me just refer to my notes. So I had that experience at my first meeting where like NA was where the love was. And I just had this group of cool people, who were doing cool things like bowling and going to see live music, and they were in bands, and we would go, you know, to the beach, and we would go just have fun and, you know, smoke cigarettes and play cards and stay up late and play charades and just play games and have fun. So my early recovery, it was kind of like this, like, as long as I don't get high, I'm doing pretty fucking good. But the problem, you know, in hindsight is that I was still kind of using things, to get loaded a little bit, you know, at one point. And my friend Warner, God rest his soul, he was like an old timer. He was in a band. And I remember at this meeting at the Gilman Street, in Berkeley, it was like my most cherished meeting, 'cause you could smoke cigarettes in there. And I think I was like drinking Red Bull, like chain smoking cigarettes, and I had snuff. I somehow found out that like at smoke shops you could buy like powdered tobacco that you could snort. So I'm like snorting fucking tobacco in a meeting, chain smoking, like getting so jacked up on caffeine that was like, you know, just a step down from meth. Like, and then doing other things like, you know, even before I got clean, just changing the way I felt with like fucking compulsive masturbation, food, and then involving others in my antics. So just being clean and like not giving a fuck and just like kind of being a whirlwind in the world and not caring. And that wound up like not serving me. And I guess I had to go through that to, you know, to experience the pain to get like to the next level or whatever. And it wasn't until I had like 7 years clean that I finished the 12 steps. I stuck on a 4-step for like, and that was one thing that I think being in like my sponsor at the time, I picked her 'cause she was cool. And, she was like, there's no rush to do the steps. And I really didn't, I wouldn't recommend that, but I stayed clean. So I don't know. And I've heard over the years, like some of my favorite shares just for my perfectionist, you know, like the perfect program is one that keeps you clean. And so I guess for that time in my like late teens, early 20s, like I was just kind of ripping and running, and also like, you know, getting used to being an adult and figuring that out, which took place slowly. I'll say I always had a home group. I always went to meetings, and I was always sponsored. Now, whether I was actively like working a step, that probably I would pick shit up and put it down, and I would get really emotional and just avoiding my emotions. So it just took me a super long time. And I have trouble admitting that because I feel a little bit of regret, but I try not to regret things just for today. So I guess I just needed to learn to go through all of that. Okay, I checked my time. So, yeah, I got a new sponsor, like, at that point. And I think I really, just that really sensitive, big ego, like, looking back, I think I needed, like, I really needed building up, and I needed some, like, acceptance, love, and tolerance. And so I picked a sponsor who I really admired and who was very loving and kind, because that's like the root of my addiction, is that like I don't feel okay, and then I bash myself into feeling okay or into doing better or being better. And that's my great solution, which doesn't fucking work. Or I try and think my way through something and I try and restore myself to sanity with my own thought process, which also doesn't work. So, so I really didn't feel a part of the program. I think it was like a sabotage. That's another thing. Like, I'm a sabotager. I'm like, let me just give my excuse, like myself excuses to feel bad. And then ultimately, if I feel bad enough, I'll get loaded. Fortunately, I never did after I got clean in the year 2000, but I kind of hit some emotional bottoms in recovery and, out of my own behavior, you know? And Frankie actually said, I don't know where she got this from, but I have a couple Frankieisms, where like you haven't hit bottom until you've hit bottom sober, or clean. Actually, now that I work in treatment, sober, clean, it's all a jumble. But, so yeah, that's definitely true. And like I guess the theme of what I wanted to share was progress, not perfection, because that's just like so my story. Like, I am so not the poster child 12 stepper, because I've like done it my fucking way like the entire time. And it's that like school of hard knock shit where like I want to figure it out on my own, which is what I've been trying to do since I was a fucking toddler. Don't let anyone teach me. And then, you know, somebody who's like broken and fucked up thinking I'm going to like, I don't know, just funny to me, like looking back, like I'm this feeling broken and fucked up and I'm resistant to like let people help me. There's this one moment when I got out of treatment back in 2000 when I got clean, and this dude, I shared at a meeting and I was like crying and super emotional. And, this dude walks up to me. This was like I had, you know, 2 months clean at the time. And he hands me this pamphlet, The Triangle of Self-Obsession. And I was so offended by the title of this pamphlet. Like, I didn't read it for like years. And then when I finally did, I was like, oh yeah, that's 100% me. Like, he had me completely pegged, and like, but I didn't like older men telling me what to do because they reminded me of my dad, because they're all my dad, you know, because that's what you do. You project your shit. But over the years of like actually doing recovery and reaching out for help, like, the best times in my recovery, and I should be wrapping up, right, Chris? I should be done at 10. Okay. The best times in my recovery have been when I am like reaching out and involving others the most. And my old thinking comes back like all the time with a vengeance. Like, I know I still need to be here. Like, I still keep showing up to meetings because I'm still at heart. Like, my default mode is like thinking I'm the worst, overthinking things, relying on myself because I'm too scared to be vulnerable with someone else to ask for help. You know, my default mode is pretty not cool, even though, you know, there's nothing wrong with me per se. It just feels really wrong when I get off balanced. And the easiest way for me to feel balanced and grounded is showing up to a meeting, or being of service and just reminding myself, yeah, the core struggle is I'm an addict and I want to change how I feel. And I think another misconception that I had about recovery was that the more I was in recovery, that I would be somehow have fewer emotions. like I'm definitely more emotionally stable most days. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to have emotions. And so that's just kind of something to come to. And also, having emotions doesn't, you know, feelings aren't facts. That was a revelation for me once upon a time. But they're also not terribly wrong to have either, which I was super in judgment about. My emotions for a lot of years, and I can still get into that old thinking, right? It's about, I'm not okay just as I am. And I still need recovery to remember that, oh yeah, I am. And oh yeah, there's a higher power that I can rely on. And oh yeah, the best higher power info that I get is through other people in recovery who understand the fucking thinking that I have. Dreams do come true in recovery, and things get different, things change and get different, and that's kind of how I feel like I'm doing something. I mean, yeah, it's crazy how insidious the thinking is, because I'm like, yeah, you know, things are just constantly judging or whatever. I've like, you know, done a dream of like singing in a band. I don't know if that's something I'll can pick back up, but I also work in treatment, which is kind of trippy and thrown my recovery for a crazy loop the past 3 years, but it's cool and like better for me than being in the service industry. The thing that I want to say about a higher power is like, I don't have to figure it out in order to use it. And that's something I learned in NA literature, is like, I don't have to like nail down an idea of God or goddess. Like, it can just be what it is. As if I'm using it, awesome, because I'm giving myself the message that like, I don't have the answers. And then this year, like, one of the big things is, you know, that I'm just fine and I don't have to change. I just want to not be ruled by my autopilot, which is still not set well. I don't know. Sometimes it feels like my autopilot is shifting, but really not enough to not come to meetings anymore. Like, I still need to be in actively like seeking recovery. So another thing about this year is just kind of shifting my perspective on my like character defects or liabilities or challenges. And that is just having like more, I guess, like compassion. Like we're all just trying to be human. And like, again, that, you know, my judgment and my bitchy, like people used to say like, oh, she's a, people think you're a snob and people think you're bitchy. And I really kind of took that on. But what it was I didn't want to, like, even in recovery. And so I think I've softened a lot and noticed the softening in the past few years. But I was really just so fearful that I would just be quiet and silent because, you know, if I open my mouth, then like people are going to find out that I'm like dumb or that I'm somehow not good enough, right? They're going to find out how I feel about myself, or they're going to know the truth, you know? So that's been like, you know, just noticing that that's comes from like a little weak spot and a tender spot at that, you know, I don't have to go around like when I'm really in the program and like working it, like I don't have to be fearful of fucking everything. And I can just be my little sensitive self that's like sweet and wants all the love, and I don't have to be like cool, that whole cool girl thing. Like I've done that and that does not work for me. I still get into it a little bit, but that's like me and my like protected, like I'm not. And that's something I learned with the sponsor. Like I can't do this. I still need a sponsor because I when it comes to my own shit, it's like hard for me to see, right? And so, yeah, like, of course I want to not care about things and be cool and like unaffected by everything. That doesn't work. And what's also becoming not workable is this aversion to practicing faith in a higher power that I'm going to be taken care of if I am honest and am vulnerable. And so, yeah, practicing that in relationships, that's cool. Magic, recovery is magic. I barely know how it works except going to meetings, working steps with a sponsor, doing service, and magic happens. And the magic is, for me, the NA simple promise is freedom from active addiction. Because that is, I mean, like, that's really all, if I came, remember where I come from, it's like, all I wanted was to not use, and I could not use when I got here. And so if I'm judging my life, measuring by those standards, freedom from active addiction, fuck yeah. And I've had that for over 20 years now. So, that's all I've got. I've said enough. Thanks, Chris. Hope someone, you know, got something.
Thank you so much, Lila.
Okay, thanks, Lila.
Yeah, awesome job, Lila.
Yeah, thanks. It was great.
Thanks for all my peeps that showed up. You know who you are, Susan and Frankie.
Love you. Great share, Lila.
Thanks,
I love hearing you
too.
It's so good.
Thanks, Lila. That was amazing.